Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, Cillian Murphy is on our screens again, appearing in the latest Ben Wheatley movie called Free Fire. The film also stars Jack Rayner and Brie Larson. In it, Cillian Murphy and Belfast actor Michael Smiley play two IRA men set in a Boston warehouse in 1978. It's a thriller, and it's guns and gunfights all the way. I sat down and had a chat with Cillian Murphy the other day about the movie and what he's up to at the moment. I'll bring you that in a minute or two, but let's first hear a clip from Free Fire.
Here he is.
Thousand apologies. I hate it when people are tardy. It's good to meet you, boys. Thanks for coming out.
The small talk. Let's buy some guns, eh?
Cillian, how are you doing? Are you all right?
I'm grand, thanks, Dave. How are you?
Good, I'm very glad to hear it. If I was to say kind of an arms deal that goes very wrong in a sort of a very grotty, I don't know, concrete warehouse, keep going.
You'd be pretty accurate there. Yeah, so it's 1978 Boston, and myself and Michael Smiley arrive to complete what should be a very easy arms deal.
Yeah.
And then, naturally enough, things go terribly wrong.
Naturally enough, otherwise he wouldn't have a movie.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, like, it is an action thriller on one level, whether you like it or not, and it's in one small place. So in some ways it could remind you of The Raid or Assault on Precinct 13, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, although I think Ben wears his influences, you know, pretty clearly in the fact that, you know, it's a lot of 70s films and kind of Walter Hill and that sort of stuff that he's influenced by. And, you know, yeah, it is definitely a thriller, and the fact that it's set in the 70s, you know, I think helps us because we don't have any mobile phones or anything like that. So, you know, it's just when things go badly wrong, they're just stuck there and they're kind of badly injured and having to deal with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, if I gave you one line, Vernon was misdiagnosed as a child genius and he never quite got over it. It's a comedy as well.
Yeah, it is. It's a very black comedy, I'd say. Yeah, they're kind of quite colourful characters that you find in this arms deal from all over. So there's me and Smiley who are Irish, and then you've got Vern who's South African, and Brie Larson's character who's American. So yeah, it's a pretty varied and colourful characters.
Do you think in any way at all, to get racist for a second, that there's something about the South African accent that lends itself to being, this guy's an asshole?
you said that now. Your words.
Really, it's so easy for him to be.
Well, he's pretty sharp.
He does get those lines, though.
He's fantastic in it. And I love about him is the vanity of the character. And there's something sort of innately funny about a character that is that vain, you know, and he does it brilliantly.
What about the idea of the sound of the movie, which has to be very important, if just to feel one bullet is going up against an iron railing, another one's going to a concrete wall, another one's going to somebody's leg, and there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't know what the editing might be like. You know there's a swooping camera on the ground all the time.
Uh-huh.
Or there's an awful lot. Like, how do you know that you can trust somebody that can make something out of this mess as you film?
Yeah, well, this sort of... Like, how this project evolved for me was that I had seen Kill List in the cinema in London, I don't know how many years, 4 or 5 years ago, and I was absolutely knocked out by it. I thought it was a really stunning piece of work, and I don't do it that often, but I tracked down Ben Wheatley and I kind of strong-armed him into having a few pints with me, and we talked about cinema and everything else, and I said, listen, man, anything you have, I'd love to be in. So I had supreme confidence in him as a filmmaker, and I think he's a very original voice in British cinema, you know, because he writes it, he shoots it, and he edits it himself, you know, with his wife Amy, and so you have that trust going in, you know, and I think he also enjoys that thing of limiting himself, you know, by shooting in such a small space. You kind of it means you have to be inventive, I think, in how you cover it, and the sound, obviously, as you said, is a big part of that. But I had, you know, the uppermost of confidence in him.
Which is to imply that sometimes you might not have more confidence in some directors than some people who put things together.
Well, I mean, it's always easy when you can look at someone's back catalogue and you go, I love their films, obviously, and they've done great work. You know, when you take a chance in a first-timer, that's always a risk, and sometimes that can really, really pay off, and sometimes it's
not. But you've also said before, I mean, you have Dunkirk coming out soon, and you've worked with Christopher Nolan now many times, Batman, Inception, all the rest of it. You've often said about him that even with a $100 trillion budget or whatever, this guy has it all in here. And that kind of confidence flows out to you as well, and you know he knows what he's doing.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think people like Chris Nolan and, you know, and Ben Wheatley and the greats, they're very, very... they're one in a million, kind of, do you know what I mean? And Chris Nolan is very special, I think, because he kind of knows the whole structure and architecture of how a film works. In terms of, I'm talking about the narrative and also in how a movie set works and how everyone's job and what it's supposed to be. He kind of knows it better than they do. And he's very tough, like he's very rigorous and very tough, but you can tell again by the sorts of films that he makes that you're very safe. Safe is not the right word in terms of you should never feel safe, but safe to try stuff, safe to fail, safe to be foolish, safe to invent. You know, that's what I mean by safe.
Yeah, you've also said before, Killian, that, like, you know, you were always, you were kind of in one way born to perform, not to do the things that you might have been expected to do at the school that you went to in Cork, but that's just that you a stage of some sort, be it playing music, be it acting in a play, or be it, you know, when somebody shouts action and you act. Is that something that, like, gradually came along in some ways, and you were very pleased with that? Like, you did music first, you then did a lot of play stuff, you had 5 years on stage before it was the big screen and bigger screen. Were you very happy, when you look back now, past 40, at the way the road went?
Well, yes,
It looks to me as though it couldn't have been more perfect.
Well, I'm happy in that it was gradual.
That's one thing, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I would have dealt with that catapult thing, you know, that happens to some young kids, and I said that's very strange, and you know, I think it must be very hard to deal with. For me, it was, as you say, very, very gradual. And I think, you know, I have two boys myself, and if they have that, you know, then it's something that needs to come out, and you can't really suppress it, or you'd be foolish to try and suppress it. And you know, with me, it kind of came out in different ways, and It just will come out. You kind of have to listen to yourself, I suppose.
But the one that you're not doing now, the music, do you still do it in terms of writing songs? Do you still try to write a song? Or are you too busy learning lines and everything else?
Occasionally, it kind of, again, I get the impulse to do it and it'll happen. But I'm very aware of it will not go beyond, you know, my little tape recorder or whatever, that's where it's going to be. But it's sometimes very sort of calming, and it kind of it's a nice release to just create something.
Yeah.
The thing about it, being an actor, is that you're always interpreting somebody else's work, and that's the nature of it. You're never the author of your own work, so it's nice the odd time just to write a little piece and go, yeah, you know what, that I did that.
Actually, I'm just trying to think, is there any music out there of the Sons of Mr. Green Jeans, your band from school?
No. Thank God we were...
It's not stealable from YouTube or anything?
No, thank God we were pre-internet, pre-mobile phone, so all the stuff...
That doesn't mean you're safe.
Probably not, but I'm very proud of all the stuff that we did, but at least you don't have an embarrassing tape that gets played any time you do a talk show or anything like that. You know,
just thinking in terms of, like, you know, the things that happened. There was a 1 month scene in your life when four different things happened. When you were offered a deal as a musician, a 5-album deal. You did Disco Pigs. Then you failed some exams. You met your wife, or your now wife, at the same time.
Yeah.
Wait, now wife implies a previous one. You met the girl who became your wife.
Yeah.
So, like, when you look back on that, like, that's a pretty good, decent month of, wow, something was, you know, it chose a good path.
Yeah, that was a mad month, August 1996. Yeah, but again, you know, when your life is kind of in that state,
you don't know it when it's happening.
You don't, do you? No one does when people live through mad times or sort of formative times or stuff that will change or alter the course of your life or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't really know. It's only when you look back in hindsight and you go, wow, that was a mad time.
And are you still listening to lots of music?
Yeah, all
would
the
it
time.
Be all new music? A lot of it. I mean, like, for instance, like Peaky Blinders, David Bowie came along. Or David Bowie liked that. Must have been a nice thing. So, did he say, "I want some of my music in there"?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, pretty much.
And
yeah,
he must have meant quite a bit to you growing up.
Huge, you know, huge. I got to meet him, you know, and it was very, very special. I thought the use of his music in the last series was appropriate. You know, I think you got to be careful with a songwriter like as iconic and with songs as iconic as his. You can't just slap them on any old thing because the songs are actually bigger than the story you're trying to tell. What we used was one of the later songs, and I think it just worked with the story. But yeah, I mean, I still you know, I think we're all still kind of in mourning, you know, it was such a loss, but he left us with such gifts, you know.
And your character not getting killed in a field in Peaky Blinders, it was very, like, I mean, every time you watch it, like, you know, I don't think there's been one programme where you haven't had a gun pointed to your head. There's lots of stuff. It's just relentless kind of stuff. If it is exhausting for us to watch, is a series like that as exhausting for you to actually film?
It is. It's very intense. And the nature of television is that you're effectively making, you know, three feature films in 4 months. So you're the schedule is nuts. But I love it. I mean, it's total immersion. You have to kind of cancel reality. And I enjoy that. And I know the character to such a degree now that it kind of can get into it easier than before. But he's relentless. I've never encountered anybody like him. I don't think he probably could exist in the real world, but the relentlessness of him and that sort of self-belief and that drive is, yeah, it takes something to play because it's not me.
And you've often said that one of the things that really excites you most about the whole process of what you do is rehearsing for a play on stage, those weeks of rehearsal and what you can do, because once you're on there, you're on. And as you've said before, the nuance can't be on the stage as such, and the nuance has to be there on the screen, and that could be one of the differences, if you like.
Yeah, but it's funny because I think talking about this film, Free Fire, and, you know, the difference between that and theatre, in you know, generally it is acting in the close-up, you know, making the audience understand what this person is thinking. But in this film, in Ben's film, we did a lot of broad physical acting, which is great. You know, when you think back to silent movie stars, it was all about the body. Do you know what I mean? And so it's very liberating to actually get to act with your body on film, you know, because it is. We're sort of the close-up has become our thing. Whereas here we get to actually do the whole full body acting, and that's great. And in theatre, you don't have a close-up. You just have the wide shot.
And when you went in for Free Fire, I mean, the whole idea of every one of you wearing the clothes you had to wear, it just seems like, first of all, did you ever wear clothes like that? Were you young enough, old enough to
well,
them?
I'm born in the mid-70s, so...
Not really.
I guess as a kid, but we you know, we were very clear about that we didn't want it to be a sort of, you know, flares and flowers, you know, that it was a lot of it was based on street photography from, like, New York around. And that flower power stuff didn't really take off. It became the thing, but a lot of them wore slim pants and leather jackets, so there's, I don't think there's actually any flares in our film at all, and they had to be sort of real, you know.
And, like, in terms of just what you do and what you choose to do, that's out. You've got The Party, is that what it's called, coming up?
Yes.
Yeah. You've got, as I mentioned, Dunkirk. Hippie Hippie Shake is going to happen. It's going to come out at some stage.
Oh, I don't think it will, actually.
It really won't, will it not?
I don't think that's ever going to come out.
What's the trouble with that? Why not?
I don't really know, to be honest. I think it was because, it was a story about people that, Richard Neville, who actually, I think he's passed away now, but he did. At the time, I don't think he agreed with it, and there was other people that didn't particularly agree with their portrayal, and I'm not actually 100% sure. It was bizarre, because you work in a film, you put, you know, as your duty is to put a lot of passion and everything into it, and then it just disappears, and strange. But it happens more often than you think.
Oh, yeah, I'd say it does.
There's a lot of films.
By the way, you're back home now. I mean, as in not in Cork, but you're living in Dublin now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good... Is that a permanent... As much as you know? I mean, like, for instance, you won't do your 20 years in Hollywood, will you?
No. I mean, I love living briefly in LA and working over there, and it's very attractive with the sunshine and the food. And but I've always felt European, and that's just my sensibility. And we did 14 years in London, loved it, but it just felt time to come back, you know, for the kids and for ourselves. And it's been great being home. It really has. It's worked out brilliant.
And the movie Free Fire, then, what's it like to work with other Irish people around you? Is that a good thing?
Sometimes? Yeah. We had a little
Not
bit
that
of...
you haven't done it before.
No, but I guess there was myself and Michael Smiley and Jack Rayner and Patrick Bergen all in the one picture. And because of the nature of it, we were all just hanging out together all the time, playing.
When you say darts. Hanging out together all the time, how long would a movie like that take?
This was pretty fast. This was like 7 weeks, 8 weeks. Right. But because, like, some films you'd be in a couple of days and you'd be out, whereas this, everyone was on all at a time, do you know? So we were all there together all the time. So,
all right, well, listen, congratulations, and thank you very much indeed, Killian, for talking to us. Good man.
No bother.
No bother indeed.